Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
I'm not going to do the British accent this time. I'm not going to do it.
No three for three.
Congrats to Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. Fellow Ginger, keeping it real. Good times. Good times in London today. I'm sure it's a huge party. I mean, I know it's a huge party. But I think people, don't they get a day off, too? Don't they get a day off? Were they off yesterday? Or are they off Monday? Don't they make it a big holiday weekend? Is it something along those lines? Well, you're a news guy. You
gotta
know this.
Why don't we have royals?
I don't pay attention. What?
Why don't we have royals? Like,
you're not on the royals set. I got it.
No, I mean, like, why don't
I think it's a huge party.
As,
like, they think
America
they get a day off.
Has have royals. Like, why is there no royals? That'd probably be so much controversy.
Are we really doing this? No. Why don't we have royals? About 250 years ago, a bunch of guys left so that they didn't have to deal with royals. Just if we want to go,
down that road.
So we didn't have to deal with King George.
Well, then technically, why do we watch all this? You know, whatever.
People are obsessed with celebrities, and people are obsessed with the royals just in general. It is a little silly, but whatever. As long as they're being philanthropic and whatnot, I'm okay with it. Although I know some people over there are probably incensed at the fact that they spend so much money on the royals that don't really have any political standing. It's gotta be, I know some people are frustrated by that, but whatever. That's a different show on a different network at a different time. What we did want to talk about, I know you're excited, you're probably chomping at the bit to talk NBA.
Oh yeah.
Because we're finally going to get some NBA hoops again. It's taken us a couple of days to get back to it. Obviously, your prediction of a sweep by the Cleveland Cavaliers is not happening, buddy.
No, it's not.
So
it sure isn't.
My question for you, and we'll break this all down, is are the Cavs just done? Like, are they just worn out? Or is this just a setup for a long series? Like, it's okay. They've been great at home. We'll get them back in our home, and this thing's going to go seven, and we'll figure it out. May the best team win. Because Boston is just playing so much better basketball than the Cavs, and there's only one guy in the Cavs that's really came to play. I'll give Kevin Love some props for playing pretty well in game two, but J.R. Smith was 0 for 7 in game two, right?
No points.
Is that right? Yeah.
More flagrant fouls than points. Yep.
He had more technical fouls than points, 1-0. So Kevin Love, I think he had 22 and 13, but really nobody else showed up. So they just didn't shoot the ball well. Boston playing inspired, playing great team basketball. Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, the whole crew. Really fun team to watch. I've hated the Celtics my whole life. Honestly, really have, genuinely. Went to school in Boston, lived there for 8 years. The C's weren't good then, but I still all had to hear about Larry Bird every time it came up, and I've been irritated by them as a Knicks fan my whole life. Historically, there's no comparison between the two franchises, and that's frustrating, and I never root for the Celtics. But for the first time in my life, this is a very likable Celtics team. Mm.
As far as the prediction that I gave, when you get things wrong, like, I think it depends kind of who you are, right? A lot of people try to, like, spin it, like, no, like, it's not my fault. Like, how could anyone, X, Y, Z, whatever it is. I just try to, like, learn, like, what the heck did I miss? Like, why did I think the Cavs could beat the Celtics team in four games? And it's honestly, it's the Raptors are so trash and are so horrified of LeBron that it completely wiped my memory of the Cavs having home court advantage against the 5 seed Pacers and getting pushed to 7 games. Like, honestly, the Cavs are a lot closer to what we saw against Indiana than what we saw against Toronto. And that's kind of what it comes down to. And I still think the Cavs will win. I think they could do it in six just because if they get hot after two home games, like maybe they could take game five. I think that Boston's on the road struggles are absolutely real. They lost every road game to Milwaukee. They should have lost both road games that they played to Philly, if not for Philly's incredible mistake. So I think that they should lose the games in Cleveland. And I think that whether it be the Cavs able to take game five in Boston or game seven in Boston, I still think that they'll be able to accomplish that. But it's a point where entering
this... They
better
do a game five.
I disagree.
They're going to do it. It better be game five.
I disagree. LeBron hasn't lost a game seven in like probably like a decade.
You know, Boston's franchise record in game sevens is
sure, but
it's called now, TD Garden.
Look, I'm not obviously. It'd be ideal to not have to play seven, but I do think that if they went there, I'd still give
his first tenure in Cleveland ended in Boston.
Oh, yeah. There's some crazy similarities to what's going on right now. The thing that continues to amaze me, though, right, in kind of, so what I just said there, right, like they're closer to the Pacers than the Raptors. The thing that is so strange, right, is the entire concept is they're scared of LeBron. But why is it that the role players can, like, play well against the Raptors, and they can't, like, seemingly do anything against the Celtics? I will say this, honestly, and we spoke about this briefly, you know, after the games or whatever. It's just, I don't know if Ty Lue coaches in the NBA after this season. And it's a very layered reason why. Like, part of it is, I feel incredibly confident LeBron is about to leave. Everybody knows he got this job in large part because of LeBron. It's also because Ty Lue is not good as a coach. He is running next to zero sets, and he is completely clueless on what to do with in-game adjustments and simply just rotations. Like, Jeff Green has been abysmal. And it's to a point where he almost shouldn't play, and he's playing him in some of the most crucial points of games consistently. He all of a sudden decided that the Kevin Love at the five lineup was the worst thing that could ever happen, yet it being incredibly effective in certain pockets and just completely went away from it. It's one of those things where it just, he seems to have zero feel for what's happening. And it's incredibly difficult to see that be the case, while Brad Stevens does have the ability to adapt to so many different things on the fly and do it with so much composure.
Yeah. It seems like everything Brad Stevens is touching turns to gold, you know? And a lot of that, and you have to give him a lot of credit for the way they're playing. It doesn't need to be said about Kyrie and Gordon Hayward not being here, but it's pretty amazing that he's getting the type of play that he's getting from Marcus Smart, who's fresh off thumb surgery, by the way. It's not like he was just not getting minutes. He was hurt, and they were managing, hoping he would come back, and it was like each and every game, like, we hope to have him back tonight. We hope to have him back tonight. And it doesn't matter that Marcus Smart doesn't fill the stat sheet with some of the traditional stuff. I saw a tweet from Bob Ryan, a proud BC grad as well. He said he's been watching the Celtics since 1964, and he doesn't know if he remembers a player that can do the intangibles in the manner that Marcus Smart does. He's just kind of amazing in that way. You know, Jeff Green clueless the other night, and Marcus Smart takes the ball from him. After Green gets a big rebound, he dribbles, not paying attention, and Marcus Smart dives the ball and steals it and taps it to a teammate. Like, those types of plays. He gets a follow-up layup, just playing intense with the intensity defensively that you need to play in the playoffs, and the Cavs were just lacking that intensity completely, save for one player. And he took a shot on the jaw and wasn't 100% after that. it needs to be said. I'm not going to get into the whole concussion thing because some people thought there was some controversy that maybe he had his bell rung and there was concussion and he should have been in a protocol. But safe to say, LeBron didn't look 100% defensively after he took that shot.
No, he certainly didn't. The thing, though, is for him to still finish with the stat line, I think it was 42, 10, and 12, and it not be enough.
That's
like,
right.
It's alarming.
16 for 29 shooting, too. 5 of 11 from 3. Like, he did everything well. He scored 21, I believe, in the first quarter. And, you know, to your point, you said Jeff Green was the one that's been abysmal. He 28 minutes, he's 2 of 5, 6 points, a minus 17 for Jeff Green while he's on the floor. you know, and there are other guys, too, that, you know, we thought might have some contribution. You know, I'm sure people know by now that Rodney Hood refused to go into that game against the Raptors. He did play 11 minutes the other night. Kyle Korver was 4 for 8, but, you know, Jordan Clarkson was a guy that they thought might have some sort of contribution. He's getting DNP'd in these games consistently. So I don't know what it is that they can do. I say that collectively the team can't be as bad as they were in game 2,
right.
But we'll see. It is funny that Morris does have an impact in a way that I wouldn't have anticipated. Marcus Morris does on the Cavs, whether he's getting in LeBron's face to make him uncomfortable or getting in Tristan Thompson's face to start a fight. Morris has had at least some sort of impact on this series. He was a plus 7 the other night.
No, Marcus Morris has been, I mean, pretty much, I don't know how many Celtics you can point to and say they've been bad. Forget this series, like these playoffs. Like, they've been getting pretty much positive contributions, like, consistently from anybody that they need to rely on. And, I mean, that is one of the things that, right, like, Brad Stevens has to get credit for that. Like, the fact that at no point does it feel like anybody is letting this team down because he knows, you know, he can pull people out in certain spots. He knows if he has to switch things up, like, all of those things. I do think for Cleveland, the thing is, it's so strange, right? Like, they're going to go home, all the expectations are win. To say the game is a must-win is completely foolish because, obviously, if they lose, they're down 3-0. We don't need to have any conversation about what happens when you're down 3-0. It's how they win. Like, they need to go out there. And because the thing about Cavs, it's pretty much been their identity since LeBron has come back. It's their offense. And yes, this is what happens when a guy like Kyrie Irving leaves. Is you need reliable scorers when things go awry. Like, the Cavs have LeBron. They can trust him, period. Their three-point shooters, aside of Kyle Korver, are kind of streaky guys. Like, J.R. Smith is the definition of streaky. I mean, the fact that, like, Jeff Green is one of the first guys that I mentioned. I mean, George Hill was good for the regular season, but, I mean, that is, you know, he's all right. He's probably the second best guy in terms of shooting the three ball.
Yeah, he took 33 minutes the other night. He took 4 shots.
Yeah. It's just,
like, they just don't, he's not confident or he's not getting looks enough to be able to convert anything. LeBron took 29 shots. Love took 18. JR took 7, misses all of them. And then nobody else, and Korver took 8. And then nobody else is really putting the ball up. Tristan Thompson, 4 of 6. He's obviously, you know, he's doing cleanup and close to the rim stuff. And then George Hill is 1 of 4. He's 0 for 2 from 3. JR Smith is 0 for 4 from 3. Jeff Green, 1 for 3 from 3. He's playing 28 minutes, putting up 5 shots. And Jeff Green is supposed to be a scorer.
I mean, here's the thing, right? So they had 37 field goals, the Cavs. LeBron had 16 field goals and 12 assists. 28 of the 37 field goals LeBron had to do with. That's 9 field goals that didn't directly come from LeBron James. I understand that people feel like this always kind of happens where everything is either LeBron has done everything all on his own or LeBron gets zero blame. And I know it slightly bothers people. But when you look at what is being laid out in front of you, like for it to be universally recognized as the rest of this team is not carrying their load, and for him to still be able to have 12 assists, it's one of those things where it's just, I don't know how much more you need. Like there were a couple people who were asking me kind of just going into that game too. It's like, if they lose, you're going to be nervous. I'm like, probably not, because they still have to go to Cleveland. Although, if LeBron goes out there and has a dominant game and they lose that game, that's somewhat concerning because you're not supposed to lose those games. Well, 42 points, 10 boards, and 12 assists is a dominant game on better than 50% shooting from the field. It is concerning. Like, we're at a point where, honestly, in a scenario where they came out of this 2-0, right, like I was going to be surprised no matter what because I said Cavs in four. I'm at a point now where anybody who says the Celtics are going to win the series, I have no... Like, typically, I am a quick reactor when it comes to the LeBron type of stuff. And I'm like, are you kidding me? It's LeBron James. Like, how are you going to doubt LeBron James? Like, this is LeBron. He's in the Eastern Conference. Stop. I get it. I completely get it. Like, this team is way better than people want to give him credit for because of Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens is incredibly good as a coach. And at the end of the day, you know what? Top to bottom, they do have a better roster. Like, LeBron's the best player. Go ahead.
So, I'll say this. I thought it was Cavs in six. I have changed my mind. Those two games did change my mind. I have to stick with my prediction. I'm not going to fix it or adjust it now, but I don't think the Cavs are going to come back to win this series at the moment. I don't say that with an extreme level of confidence. I just didn't like what I saw in those two games. You're even talking about you feel pretty confident that LeBron is going to leave. I'm not getting a huge vibe from the games that LeBron doesn't want to be there. But as Jeff Van Gundy said, he had the line of the year, the Cavs have more eye rolls than a couple in a bad marriage. They just eye roll each other all the time, good, bad, or indifferent. And I think it's a result of LeBron really being hard on people. And, it created a situation where they had to blow the team up in the middle of the year. I mean, he drags bad teams to the NBA finals, and he's got to be tired of doing it. Wherever he ends up, Houston, Philly, you could pick it. He can go wherever he wants. He doesn't really need the salary, right? So it's not to the highest bidder. He can kind of go where he wants. But ultimately, who do you have tonight?
I got the Cavs. I think the Cavs will be even 2-2 after they head back to Boston.
You think they cover the 6.5-point spread?
I'll say yes.
Okay. I'll say yes, too, but I have a hard time betting against Boston at this point. We'll talk Warriors-Rockets after this on FST.
Psst. Hey, you, over here. You want to win a DFS? And you want it for just $1? I got Daily Roto here. Now, why do you want it? Two of the guys behind it have won $1 million. It's not just about the writers. Not one, not two, but three subscribers have won $1 million, too. That's five millionaires. Five, count them. And it's not counting the $100,000 winners, too. They talk about it in the Slack channel. But why is it a dollar right now? Special price for the month of May. Yeah, if you don't like it, then walk away. If you love it and you're winning, keep going. Do I use it? How do you think I afford my massive tracksuit collection? Come on, look at the glitter on this. It's beautiful. You can sort your stats, add your own weights, read articles, distinguish between slates on FanDuel and DraftKings. You gotta go to DailyRoto.com and enter code $1. I may just be a creepy guy in a random alley inside your head, but I know what I'm talking about. That's DailyRoto.com, code $1. That's it, $1, 1 month, and start winning.
We're back on FST. Got to let the Pearl Jam play. Back on FST, Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh. If you want a chance to win two tickets to a 2018 World Series game, go to dailyroto.com/DKMS and take a crack at playing free daily fantasy baseball. You can play every day. It's totally free. And the contests are sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. You know, every 3 minutes, an American is diagnosed with blood cancer, and only 30% of all blood donor patients are able to find a compatible bone marrow donor in their family. So go to dailyroto.com/DKMS, find out how you can help eradicate blood cancer, and play free daily fantasy baseball with a shot at winning two tickets to a 2018 World Series game. So we have had brutal weather here in New York. I just feel like the need to say that. It has been absolutely brutal. Been raining for 7 days straight now. My son, who has all kinds of lacrosse and soccer practices, has been washed out the entire week. And I am taking him over to Hofstra University today, which is not far from where we live, because the NCAA lacrosse tournament is going on there today. And it's going to be brutal out there. I was looking forward to taking him, but he's five. If we're getting rained on and it's 50 degrees out, I don't know that we're going to last all that long.
No, I don't know. That doesn't sound great.
Are you a lacrosse guy? You got nothing? You got nothing on lacrosse?
I called a couple games once in college. I've got nothing. I'm surprised. Do you still live in Queens?
I live in Long Island.
No, see, that's why. It's just a...
I mean, I live in Nassau County, Long Island, which is the epicenter for lacrosse.
Yeah.
Now, for those of you from upstate New York or the Maryland area that may be listening... Don't at me, as they say. I get it. There's other breadbaskets of lacrosse players. I'm well aware. But really, much of the American collegiate lacrosse popularity centered not far from where I live, in towns like Garden City and Manhasset and the like. But
I don't play lacrosse
anyway,
in Queens.
Hofstra, not far from there. So, say that again.
They don't play lacrosse in Queens.
They do now. My high school... I did not have lacrosse when I was attending it, but they have a team now. So
Rupp has lacrosse. Well,
it's growing. It's a sport that's growing. It does. So
does cross.
It's a large high school, so it can kind of support that. So, in any event, I will be going over to watch some lacrosse. So I'm a sports enthusiast at every level, and lacrosse is a sport that my son plays. I like watching it. Not going to do any content on it, but I'm going to watch Yale play Loyola and Denver play Albany. So we'll see. Albany will probably have the most fans. Yeah, it'll be fun. I just wish the weather was pretty good. So I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, on to the other game of the day. You know, I'm going to go back. I'm not sure that I should take Cleveland laying the 6.5.
I'm
not sure about that.
Let me ask you this. Do you think it's 2-2 going back to Boston?
No.
You don't. You think it's 3-1?
I think they're gonna take game four. And I say that with 51% confidence.
Oh yeah, it was noticeable throughout that long pause.
Yeah. I like 51% confidence. I'm trying to map it out how it's going to happen. And like, do the Cavs take game five in Boston and then Boston closes it out in game six? It probably makes the most sense for me to say yes, and then Boston just wins two of the final three, including the game seven, to send LeBron home. That probably makes the most sense. But I just don't like the way Cleveland is playing at all. I think they can get enough done tonight that Stevens won't freak out, and on Monday when they play, they'll come back and do it. But... you know, like, it wouldn't even stun me if they won tonight. It really wouldn't. I just think Cleveland, some of those guys are that checked out. Like, you can imagine, and I do not absolve them for this, but you can imagine how a guy like J.R. Smith, who, let's face it, he's not the most professional player in the league, right?
How he
could just be like, he's talked about playing golf, like, during this... 2-0 pasting that Boston is giving them. He's talked about playing golf. I think he just wants to go do that. And, like, he gets it. But if he thinks LeBron, if he's getting a vibe that LeBron is out in a couple of weeks, good, bad, or indifferent, then what is he busting his butt for this? I'm just going to play some golf. I'm going to cash these checks, and I'll see you when I see you.
I actually think JR is one of
already got a ring.
Is one of his closer friends, speaking of LeBron, on the team. I think that was just a JR frustration because he knew how horribly he was playing. I don't know if I've ever seen a player commit a foul like that and just so blatantly in the post be like, "Oh yeah, that was a flagrant. No, I pushed him. That was a bad, that's what I did." But not really show remorse at all. Just like, "That's what I did. The fans booed me. They should boo me. I have no anticipation of any of them liking me because I'm on the road." Good. And it was just kind of, it was one of those stranger things. Let me ask you this now, right? Game seven, if they get to the game seven in the TD Garden, Celtics versus the Cavs, a.k.a. Celtics versus LeBron is how it'll be posed. Mm-hmm. Where is your confidence level in Boston? Because my confidence level in LeBron in a Game 7 is still incredibly high.
Yeah, and I get that. I would have to see how it plays out before then, but obviously if it plays out to that point, it will be 3-1, right, in favor of the Cavs. So the Cavs will be on some sort of a roll there.
Good point.
But I wouldn't bet against Boston in a Game 7. You know, but the 6.5 points, to get back to the 6.5 points, I do think I'll probably take Cleveland, but I feel like this could be a tight game. So maybe you should take the points for Boston. I feel that way.
The thing about Boston is at point do they lay down. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Like if they're down 15 with 4 minutes left, they're like, all right, we got enough time here. And like a lot of teams typically will be like, oh, we're out.
I know. That's what's great about them. That's why they're likable. That's fun.
They're a college
team. Anything can happen. And they, a little bit, because they're missing their two stars and just kind of figuring out with a bunch of these guys. I do still am so jealous that they have Jason Tatum. He was my favorite player in the draft, and they got him, and they're going to reap the rewards for a long time. So let's get over to the other series. Golden State's a 7-point favorite tonight. Houston threw a punch back, right? Golden State, people were declaring it. It's over. Where were we sitting here? I can't remember. Were we sitting here a week ago after they had already won a game and being like, it's over? No, it wasn't us. So, in any event, that's it. People were declaring it over after game one. Steph Curry has only hit 2 threes, one in each game. But it's 1-1 headed back to Golden State. They're a 7-point dog tonight. I'm going to take them all day tonight.
They play tomorrow.
Tomorrow at 8:05 p.m. I'll be on the Warriors for that game. And I would gather that Golden State takes both of these at home. But what are your thoughts?
I'm anticipating a split. I mean, I'm sure you remember how torn I was in even actually taking Golden State, because I'm trying to gauge how much I would like Houston to beat them and how much I feel like Houston has a chance. And one of the things that I said, I was like, listen, if you think the Warriors are going to win, that makes a ton of sense to the Golden State Warriors. But the Warriors in four stuff, I found ludicrous. And they won the first game. And so many people were like, you got James Harden's 40-point game. You had some decent spurts. And you had the one bad Steph Curry game. And you couldn't win that basketball game. They missed their chance. And then we come out the next game. I mean, we want to talk about spinning, right? Because this is what happens with Golden State, where everything is like, oh, they didn't try. They didn't try. All of this stuff, right? So there's a lot of this talk about how Trevor Ariza, PJ Tucker, and Eric Gordon, how incredible they were, right? And how that's never going to happen again. But here is the let's then pose it in the way that they did after game one. The Rockets just ran the Warriors off the court with James Harden and Chris Paul combined shooting under 40%, and Clint Capella gave them 5 points, and they just ran the Warriors off the court.
Tucker was awesome.
This wasn't a perfect storm of where the Rockets played their best game of the year. That's not what happened. At some point,
yeah, I get it.
At some point in this series, I think that they're going to split these next two in Golden State, and that's probably what it's going to take. People are going to legitimately go, "Oh wow, they really are good," and their game plan has been.
They're the highest offensive rating in a regular season in the history of the NBA. The Rockets,
and no one cares. No one cares because apparently Golden State
nobody cares
strong.
Now. Yeah, nobody cares now. Yeah, I agree with that.
It's one of those things.
Yeah, Ariza 7 of 9, Tucker 8 of 9. Tucker just went crazy. I mean, he hit 5 threes and it went off. You know what I did during that game? Just full disclosure, I had taped it so I could watch it and fast forward. I went and saw a movie because I have so rarely. I have to tell you, and I know. I probably shouldn't even admit it, but I did watch the game. I just watched it. I watched it a little bit I listened to a little bit of it on the radio, and then I watched it in full after the next day, because I so rarely have a moment to myself that, and I can never, ever get to the movie theater, that my wife was under the weather, both of my kids were asleep, but everybody by 8 o'clock was in bed, and I was like, I have nothing to do except the Warriors Rockets. It's like, I'm going to go see a movie, and I saw A Quiet Place.
How was it?
Amazing.
Yeah.
I like scary movies.
I don't.
So if you don't like scary movies, this is a full stop no-go. You cannot go see that if you don't like scary movies. If you do, like I do, you got to go in. Yeah, no, it's so funny. I mean, so many guys that I know are like, I'm out. That thing's going to give me nightmares. And I can't do it, and I don't like that feeling at all. But I'm in 100%. Give me, I think horror movies are a little bit stamped out and not that unique. This is an extremely unique story, and it was awesome. So I just wanted to, I know I interjected into the middle of our Warriors Rockets talk, but I thought I should say that, hey, I went and saw a movie, and I'm going to give a recommendation. People are like, dude, that movie came out like 2 months ago. You're late to the party. I know. I can never go to the movie theater because I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. And miraculously, I was able to get there. I wish a Star Wars movie was in there or whatever. I didn't even see Black Panther. I'm probably the only guy that didn't see it. But that just says a lot about the types of movies I would rather go see. I'd rather go see A Quiet Place than Black Panther. And I'm sure Black Panther's great, but whatever.
Just the tone right there when you say, I know, because it's just, that's pure excitement. Like, I don't care how old the movie is. I went and actually got time to see a movie. Just the pure joy. So I'm
thrilled.
I'm happy.
It's the best day of my year. With all due respect to my family and Mother's Day and all the lovely times I've had, it was the best night I've had in a long time. No alcohol, just a little popcorn, some Twizzlers. Solo movies. And I used to do that all the time when I was single years ago. I used to love going to the movies by myself because nobody could bother you. You don't have to talk to anybody. Nobody can ruin it for you. And I was just locked in, and it was great. So, yeah, A Quiet Place. So back to basketball, since I derailed this there for a minute. But so you like the Warriors laying 7 tonight? Or is that too many points?
No, because I think that Houston is going to grab one of these, I would then probably just take Houston.
You do.
I do think that Houston's going to grab one of these. So I just think that the two specific strategies that they're employing, I've found to be really, really effective. One of them is not surprising. The other one is. I'll start with the one that's a little bit simpler just in case we have to move to break coming up. The attacking Steph Curry on the defensive end consistently is perfect. And they're doing it as often as possible with James Harden, with Chris Paul, whatever it may be. They're, even if it has to be a PJ Tucker, Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon, they're going to make sure that Steph Curry is putting out a ton of energy on the defensive side of the basketball, because at the end of the day, whether Steph Curry is 100% or not, right? Like that, it doesn't matter, because we know he can't be in 100% game shape, right? Like he missed way too much time to be in 100% game shape, because he missed a significant amount of time, came back, and it was the first or second game. I think it was the first game back, re-injured it, and then we saw him for the first time in that game one against the Pelicans. So Steph is not at least at 100% game shape. So for him to have to put forth that much energy on the defensive side of the basketball, like, look, Steph is going to have some good games. Like, he's not going to only make 1 3-pointer per game. But I don't necessarily think that this Steph Curry that we've seen is some type of thing that we're not perhaps going to see in a couple more of these games, because of what they are forcing him to do on the defensive side of the basketball almost, or not, I would say every possession, but as many possessions as possible.
Yeah, they're attacking Steph. I don't think there's any doubt about it, and they should, because he's not 100%. Doesn't matter that he had 7 rebounds, 7 assists. I mean, he's not right in shooting 7 for 19, and he's not right defensively. Whatever you thought of him as a full strength player defensively, that doesn't matter now because he's not 100%. I do think this plays out where I think the Warriors can take both of these games. And by the way, we'll talk more about this tomorrow because we're on for 3 hours tomorrow. Mm. But I do think the Warriors can take both of these, go back to Houston. Houston gets game five, come back to Golden State game six. That's the way I think it plays out.
Because I had
the Warriors in six. I think that's the way it plays out.
I think that that's totally fair. I feel as if the Houston's game...
I'm not saying they're going to run over him here.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that Houston's game can travel, though, right? Like, it is a ton of isolation basketball, and it's just a lot of threes. And at the end of the day, like, whatever gym you're in, you're shooting a bunch of threes, and you're looking for mismatches to have your best guys attack their worst guys.
At the end of the day, we're just seeing who hits the most threes. That's the way this series is going to play out. I think if you're encouraged by one thing about Houston, they bounced back from a bad game one. They blew the Warriors out. And you know what? They were not panicked after game one. They weren't at all. They handled it very calmly. D'Antoni was almost dismissive. Yeah, very wrong coach, very different sport. D'Antoni was almost dismissive of the criticism, right? Because they know they're going to play their style of basketball, and it wins. So what are they changing it for now? They've got to make some slight adjustments, but they're not panicked at all. So we'll come back. We're going to close out this show, this three-hour marathon on the Royal Wedding Day, when we're talking hoops and football and basketball. We'll wrap it up next on FST after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Good stuff. Well, MJ. JP, producer of the week, mixing it up. Nice little flourish of God Save the Queen and Pearl Jam and Thriller. I don't know what that says about our show, but we like to mix it up. All right, Kev. So last segment, we've talked about the Royal Wedding. We've talked about the NBA. We've talked about football, baseball. I talked about even NCAA lacrosse, which I'm not going to break down those games because I've watched very little of any of the teams. And I talked about A Quiet Place, which was awesome. John Krasinski, Emily Blunt. Do you know what it's about? I can give you a breakdown of that if you like.
I think I know the premise of the movie. I tell you, I don't. It's just not in me, the whole scary movie thing. I'm like, why people want to be horrified? It's just so bizarre to me in a way. I don't know. It's
awesome. Well, the plot of the movie is really cool. It's you have to piece it together because they don't explain it, because they're not really talking for most of the movie. It's mostly sign language.
What's the, like, one of the, it's so, one of the best movies of all time, though, that it's a scary, is it Shawshank Redemption? Is that the one?
Shawshank Redemption?
Is that not scary.
What are you talking about?
I'm trying to
listen. You think Shawshank Redemption is a horror movie?
Hold on. Just listen. You'll be surprised how little.
You cannot be a movie guy.
I'm not.
I know that movie is older than you, but that is an unbelievably bad reference.
Hold on.
Not a horror movie?
No. Not Shawshank Redemption. It's the one with Jack Nicholson. What the heck is that?
The Shining?
The Shining. That's the one. Listen, yes. I'm not a movie guy. Whatever.
You're very much not.
Don't worry.
The Shining is an extremely scary movie, too. Yeah. And I watched that recently as well.
But isn't The Shining recognized, though, as, like, regardless of the scale, like, one of the better movies of all time? I think, if I'm not mistaken.
I would say in that genre, it's absolutely one of the best movies ever made.
Right. And, yes. Like, so it's one, like, I know I probably should watch
super
it.
Super scary
again,
Stephen
like,
King
eh.
book and directed by Stanley Kubrick. It was a really incredibly scary movie. I've seen it enough times now where the juice is taken out of it a little bit, but The Quiet Place in the theater was incredible because of the sound. There's a sound component to the movie, the quiet versus the not quiet, that makes it extremely more suspenseful. I'm telling you, if you don't like scary movies, you can't see it. It is really scary at points. There's one brutal scene in it.
It's less though. Like, I know people are like, it's like, oh, I'm gonna have nightmares. It's just that the whole jumping sensation. I'm just not. I don't know. I'm not big on, but like, maybe.
You do it a lot.
I know. Like, maybe.
Yeah, you'll do it a lot in this. I did. Maybe. I like scary movies.
Do you like roller coasters?
I jumped a whole bunch of times, but I liked. No, actually,
I
don't.
Hate
so that's the funny
coasters.
Thing. No, I'm out on.
I don't
roller
do
coasters.
Them at all.
There's like a height. There's a height component that I don't love, and I. You know what the irony is? I've thought about this a bunch. I think conceivably, my son and or daughter will get to an age where, like, hey, let's check out that roller coaster. And my wife is 1,000,000% out, and I'm out. But if somebody's going to have to bite the bullet, it's me.
Yeah, no,
she's
I'm
not going
to.
My wife's going to be like, you have to go because I'm not going. Like, my wife will, you know, she'll be the person that gets sick on the roller coaster, and she'll be really embarrassed for the rest of her life, so she can't do it. So I will have to do it. So at some point, I'm going to have to talk myself into it. I'm not scared of heights in a way that I once was, and I fly all the time. So, like, that kind of stuff, I don't have extreme phobias, but I just don't really – I wouldn't really want to do a roller coaster like that. I think that would just make me ill or whatever. But we'll see.
Maybe. My brother's
Quiet Place, it's you have to piece it together, but these meteors crashed Earth, and these monsters are released, and it's basically a post-apocalyptic scenario because these monsters – kill everybody. You don't see a ton of them initially, and then you start to realize that everybody is using sign language and walking without shoes and all this kind of stuff so that they don't make noise, because the monsters are attracted to, bothered by, sensitive to noise. So if you make any noise, they come and they attack you and they wipe you out.
SNL did like a skit about that. The Quiet Place.
So I didn't see that, but anyway, much of the movie is spent with the characters not even talking to one another, and that's what makes, whenever there is a sound, it creates a ton of suspense. You're like, oh man, what's gonna happen? So anyway, highly recommend it, and there you go. That's my movie review of the week. I don't get a chance to see many movies, so when I had the opportunity, despite the fact that the Rockets were playing the Warriors, I took it, and it was extremely enjoyable. I loved every second of it. Going to the movies by myself is a great joy of mine. I considered myself at one point a movie snob. I might have been a dilettante in that regard because I didn't go to film school and I'm not an actor or any of that other kind of stuff. But I really loved going to the movies and all that kind of stuff. So when you get a chance to do it again, which is really hard to do when you have little kids, I took the opportunity to do it. So anyway, so what do you got? We got 10 minutes to go. You got to have something for me. You talked about Dak Prescott. We got NBA. What do you got?
I got something for you. I was kind of hoping we got to this. So I don't know if by chance you saw the it kind of started to circulate, I think, more popularly because it was talked about on Twitter. But Zach Lowe did a conference finals podcast where he had Windhorst on, and they were talking just about the Celtics core and if they could see any trades. And just they both felt like this idea that they're going to trade Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving is a little silly. And they were like, oh, that probably only happened if Anthony Davis were available, and he's not going to be available. But then Windhorst was like, and he tried to preface it as much as possible, and it does not matter. But he was like, this is not a report. This is not a report. But I'm just saying, has anyone seen the situation between Towns and Minnesota and how bad it is? And Zach Lowrider was like, look, it's toxic, man. It's not. I shouldn't say toxic is probably over exaggerating, but he's like, look, they're not in a good place. Like, there's certainly some differences between the two sides, and I think considering Thibs and the way he used or didn't use Karl Anthony Towns, there was a lot of conversation then about the possibility of would they trade Karl Anthony Towns, which then prompted the Bleacher Report tweeting it out as if it was a report. Which, I mean, look, it's meaningful, so you have to in some way. Maybe they could have done a better job trying to point out, like, they're not saying there's something that's going to happen, but whatever. They did it. Zach LaVine, former teammate of Karl Anthony Towns, now on the Bulls, quote tweets it with the eyes emoji, which then prompts Devin Booker, former teammate, obviously, of Karl Anthony Towns at Kentucky, to hit Zach LaVine's with the eye emojis, and then also tweet out a photo of Karl Anthony Towns wearing a Phoenix Suns jersey because he had on one of Devin Booker's jersey and things of that nature. So now we are starting to do some of these Karl Anthony Towns trade rumors, trade scenarios, and I think it's not only fascinating, I actually think it's worth talking about.
So what is it that you think could happen? Like, you mentioned it on the heels of Boston. Mm-hmm. So do you think that that's in play because Boston has enough pieces to send back the other way? By the way, I started following a guy on Twitter, Krangis McBasketball. He's a lot of statistical models. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he has pretty interesting stuff regarding aggregate. He calls it aggregate CPOE, which is really points scored over expectation.
Mm-hmm.
The database only goes back to 04, 05, but in his top guys in that regard, the top career totals in CPOE, so expected point totals, LeBron is number one, Durant two, Dirk three, CP3 four, Steph Curry five, Harden, Kobe, Ray Allen, Pierce, Mello, Wade, Bosch, Billups, Stoudemire, Korver. Amazing, right? Kyle Korver in the top 15 there. But also, I think this past year, I think he had the top career averages amongst NBA players was LeBron, Durant, Curry, Harden, Towns, five, Lillard, Dirk, CP3, and on and on and on. Yao Ming actually cracking the top 15 there, which is kind of interesting. But the point being that Towns is getting it done for many times as he touches the ball. He's getting it done, and maybe, as you're saying, I didn't realize this is as toxic as Windhorse is proclaiming. But I could see it when Towns may feel like he isn't getting enough touches or isn't being used the way he wants to be used.
Yeah, so I think part of it probably stems from just who Thibodeau is and what Thibodeau prioritizes, and it's kind of all of his old guy from the Bulls that are defense first. Like, if you're going to have a knock on Karl Anthony Towns, who averaged 21 points per game, 12.3 rebounds, and shot 42% from three on 3.5 threes a game, led the league in double-doubles. If you're going to have a knock on that guy, it would be his defense. So the reason why I felt like it was relevant is because I can see it. I can see Karl Anthony Towns not loving the situation, and I can see Thibodeau being like, no, let me move him. And I do think that the two teams are Boston and Phoenix for separate relationships, but I think their personal relationships that certainly matter in this scenario. So Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving have publicly expressed the desire to play alongside one another. And we can say, oh, Boston wouldn't do that. They traded Isaiah Thomas. They will trade anyone. Now, for another day, we'll have a conversation about how dangerous that is and how that could make a young core feel about where their priorities lie. But they would move Kyrie Irving in a heartbeat for Karl Anthony Towns, as they should. It would probably be quite a sizable package, considering the fact that Karl Anthony Towns is still on that rookie contract and the fact that he is only 22 years old. He'll be 23 by the time next season rolls around. But it would probably be something along the lines of Kyrie Irving plus the Kings pick plus another piece somewhere in that. I think that's incredibly dangerous for Minnesota because you now have Jimmy Butler, who suffered an injury within the season, and you have Kyrie Irving coming off a season-ending surgery, and you'd have them both playing in Minnesota on one-year
deals.
If the
Celtics get Karl Anthony Towns, I'm going to puke. And I know Jimmy Butler and Thibs are joined at the hip,
mm-hmm.
but if there's a problem in your organization with the coach and Karl Anthony Towns, you move the coach.
Oh, yes. 100%. The thing is, though, they may be beholden to Thibs. The thing, what it comes down to, though, that
why?
I don't know. I think, so we got into it like 2% one day where it was me, you, and Tony, and I talked about Thibs, and Tony right away was basically like, everyone needs to shut up. They're finally in the playoffs. And I was like, you know what? Not, today's not the day. Thibs, honestly, they could contemplate firing him now. I understand they made the playoffs, but this team, if Jimmy Butler, if the season was a week longer and Jimmy Butler missed an extra week, this team was out of the playoffs. They could not stay above water without Jimmy Butler. And there's enough talent there to when the season passed where they didn't even have Jimmy Butler, there were some playoff expectations. He hangs his hat on a defensive reputation that is not real. It doesn't exist anymore because they're not defensive-based. They're offensive-based because they just have talent. He's not maximizing Cat. He's not maximizing Wiggins at all. And again, he has a real problem adapting to what I think today's NBA is. And he plays people far too long. Like, that's why the injuries happen.
I agree with all of that completely. I think there is a, he's a defensive whiz, and that's all well and good, and it can be helpful, but I don't necessarily think that's the guy that you need guiding the franchise, considering what is winning in the league right now. It doesn't mean that it's the only way to win is to jack up threes at a historic rate, but those are the two best teams in the league right now. You have to figure out a more creative way to balance it than other, like, we're just going to lock these guys down. You can do it in spurts or for a game at a time, but if you're going to get into the course of 82 games plus postseason, it has to be more creative than that, and you have to be able to score with them at times. So let's just slow it down and lock them up. That's not the way of the world in 2018. Teams are too smart. There's too much data going into the way that you can beat that style of play. And I'm with you. And and like I said earlier, you can't move Karl Anthony Towns because he isn't happy with the coach. Make him happy. And it doesn't mean he's being a coach killer. It means he's not comfortable with what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. And he's a second year player. He's 22 years old. Like, make him happy. Just figure it out. Right. And like, he has parts to his game that are somewhat rare for young big men like that. He shoots free throws at a really good rate.
42% from three.
I know. It's amazing. And it's like he compares to guys like Embiid and Giannis. I know some guys are fives, other guys are different positions, but he is in that conversation. 100%. And sometimes he's left out of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
He is in that conversation if you're watching hoops all the time. But he is sometimes left out of that conversation because the Sixers are on the rise. Mm-hmm. And look, he's played more than Embiid.
Embiid's
missed millions of games.
A lot more.
So,
I think
they need to figure it out.
If I could just quickly mention the Sun scenario that is impactful. Kat and Devin Booker are insanely close. And as much as Kat maybe would be like, oh, look, yeah, sure, I'd be happy with Thibs being gone, I don't think anything would make him happier than actually being able to play with Devin Booker and vice versa. And just yesterday, I think their GM, McDonough, came out. I know he said it. I'm just making sure the name is right. McDonough came out and said, the number one pick is available for trade. So it's not as if they've locked themselves in to Luka Doncic or DeAndre Ayton. So if there's some package centered around the number one overall pick and Karl Anthony Towns, maybe there's a conversation to be had there. Because it's just one of those things where now I'm starting to feel like one way or another, those two end up on the same team. It's just a matter of if it happens this offseason or perhaps down the line when they become unrestricted free agents.
I mean, that's the thing that gets so frustrating about the NBA, because imagine having a player, if you're a T-Wolves fan, imagine having this trifecta of players right now, and then nobody can get along. Everybody understands how powerful the Western Conference is, and you got a lot to overcome, but imagine that they move Karl Anthony Towns. Like, how bummed would you be that he would just be leaving your franchise? And like, maybe Jimmy Butler will when free agency is about, and like, you got to get used to the way of the world in the NBA, or Wiggins will, but the one guy I'd want to have, and I love Jimmy Butler, but the one guy I'd want to have is Karl Anthony Towns. And if they moved him, I'd be like, well, what are we doing? You guys just traded the best player we've had and got it since Kevin Garnett was here.
We're gearing up for a wild NBA offseason, and this is just another example.
Yeah, and the money may not be as great as we saw last season, but there could be some pieces moved based on what you're talking about. So good show. We'll be here tomorrow, 9 to 12, for FST. For Kevin Walsh and producer JP, I'm Mike Blewett. Thanks for listening. Coming up next is In This League with Bogman and the Welsh.